on July 3rd. Happy 4th of July, etc. First, we'll open a public hearing on SCR 7. Senator Gordley, would you like to come up?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'd like to invite up Denise Peterson from my office.
Yes, please do.
Thank you, and good afternoon, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Avelle Gordley, and I represent Senate District 23, which includes Northeast and Southeast Portland. And with me is my legislative assistant, executive assistant, Denise Peterson, who will also speak to the resolution before you. The late Charles Maxey was a great man, a giant in Oregon civil rights history. He was a longtime Republican. The Maxey name, in the view of many, belongs in Oregon civil rights history books, along with that of the name of Otto and Verdell Rutherford, William McClendon, Marie Smith, and many, many others. Some of those names you may know and have heard. The resolution before you lays out Charles Maxey's many accomplishments, and I would also like you to understand the great impact that he and his wife, Johnny Maxey, have had on my generation of African Americans who grew up in what was then segregated North Northeast. Our neighborhoods in the 40s and 50s and into the early 60s were neighborhoods full of working class families. For example, my father worked as a Pullman porter for Union Pacific Railroad. My mother worked in the home and sometimes out of the home with part-time jobs. When my father got ready to buy his house, it was in an area that was redlined, and the irony was that he could not buy the home, and a Jewish friend bought the home and then turned it over to my dad. I share that as an example of as many working class families who were coming into North Northeast Portland. Good people like the Maxeys. They were community builders, active in church, active in the life of the community. Mr. and Mrs. Maxey raised a family, five children. They helped build Bethel African Methodist Episcopal Church. They owned the corner grocery store on North Williams Avenue and Goyang Street. They owned a barber shop in the same location. They later owned a liquor store. For his progressive business works, Mr. Maxey received an entrepreneurial award from the state of Oregon. This is someone, Mr. Charles Maxey, who also was very active in the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, or the NAACP. And he was active during that time when many Oregonians were working together with Mark Hatfield to accomplish passage of Oregon's public accommodations law. I wanted to share with you that one of my sharpest memories as a grade school child growing up in the neighborhood and often going into Maxey's Better Buy Grocery, that was the name of the grocery store, was that you could not go into this store to buy a candy bar or run an errand for your parents without Mr. Maxey or Mrs. Maxey stopping you, grilling you, literally grilling you about how are things going at school, how are your teachers treating you, tell me about your grades. You could not just say, in response to their question, how are you doing, you could not just say fine, they were going to have you unpack that fine and really tell you, really tell them how things were going. And what that says about them is that they, the Maxeys, Charles Maxey, Mrs. Johnny Maxey, they were like extended family, with permission to chastise and always with praise for the neighborhood kids. And when I look back and realize that the Maxeys, Mr. Maxey's generation, is the one that fought the early civil rights battles in Oregon, and again that battle to get the public accommodations law, then I just feel deep gratitude. Gratitude for their courage, for their perseverance, for their principled way of being in the world. That's what they modeled for us. That's what they modeled for me. And I think that Mr. Maxey's story, as you see it chronicled very briefly in the resolution before you, is certainly a story that belongs in our history books. And it's a story that is worthy of being shared in our classrooms. And I'm very pleased to see that the staff measure summary prepared by Mr. Stembridge notes that Charles Maxey's accomplishments are included in the Oregon Historical Society oral history collection. That's a wonderful thing. Madam Co-Chairs, I would tell you that we would expect that Mrs. Maxey, still living, and other family members would be present in the Senate chamber when this resolution comes to the floor. We are feeling a sense of urgency about it, as Mrs. Maxey is in not the best health, but still... Oh, my goodness, she's sharp. She's wonderful. We thank you for the opportunity to bring the resolution forward and just wish that you all had the opportunity that we had to know Mr. Maxey and to know the Maxey family. Thank you.
Oh, that's right. I'm chairing now. Thank you. Welcome, and I'm sorry I was late. I was unavoidably detained. Denise, would you like to testify as well?
Yes.
Thanks. Welcome to your Senate Rules Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chairs and committee members. My name is Denise Peterson, and I work for Senator Avail Gordley as her executive assistant, and I'm here to testify on behalf of the Senate Concurrent Resolution 7 as well for Charles Britton Maxey, known as Maxey, and I had the opportunity of knowing him for some 40-plus years and grew up in the same neighborhood as Senator Gordley. And to know Mr. Maxey was to know a man of integrity and to know him as a wonderful father to his children and to his wife, but wanted to say that he not only chastised his children, but he also chastised the children of the neighborhood, which I was one of those children. And so Mr. Maxey had owned and operated the Maxey store in Northeast Portland, where I spent most of my weekly allowance. But he always questioned me if my parents, if they allowed me, you know, if I was supposed to be around there spending my allowance. And I can appreciate his legacy and his positive impression that he left not only in the community but in my life. And I would encourage you to forward the Senate concurrent resolution to the floor. Madam Chairs and Committee, thank you for allowing me the opportunity to speak today before you.
Thank you. Any comments or questions?
Thank you for testifying. I just had one question, Madam Chair. Did he have relatives in the state of Washington? Because there was a Carl Maxey who was an African-American man who ran, I think he probably would have been in his 50s at the time, in the early 70s, who ran for the U.S. Senate from the state of Washington and actually helped out in a very minor way on his campaign.
I, Madam Chairs, co-chairs, Senator Burdick, I'm unaware if there is a connection or not, but that's something that we'll explore.
It's Carl Maxey.
We'll find out. Thank
wonderful
you.
Man.
We'll find out.
Madam Co-Chair.
Senator Clarno.
I open the public hearing only. If you want to open up a work session, I would be happy to make a motion. And I move...
Close the public hearing and open a work session on SCR 7.
I move that we send SCR 7 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Clarno has moved that we send SCR 7 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered. And Senator Gordley, would you like to carry the proposal?
Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you. Well, we appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
Thanks. With that, we'll close the public hearing and work session on SCR 7 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2378. Jim, what do we have?
Madam Co-Chair, House Bill 2378 directs the Secretary of State to reimburse county clerks for the expense of conducting a special election on state measures held on a date other than the primary general election. You have an amendment. It's the dash one amendment from Senator Walker.
Great.
Brought in some pretty heavy hitters for a bill of this magnitude.
Representative Shetterly, Senator Walker.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chairs, members of the committee. Nice to have a little less crowd behind me this afternoon than I did earlier in the week.
I think bring they're the only ones left in the building, Representative
Shetterly. Bring you a little simpler bill today. House Bill 2378, the bill in chief. Oh, for the record, Lane Shetterly, State Representative, District 23. The bill in chief is pretty straightforward. It provides that if we are going to require an election be held on a special election date that is other than a primary or general election, then as between the state or the counties, it is more appropriate that the state should bear the cost of that, since the state is the entity that is scheduling and imposing the elections on the counties. So that is what the bill does. I believe it was unanimous in the House. Senator Walker found this life ring and swam to it with an amendment of her own that I have looked at and am pleased to endorse as well. I don't have any problem with an amendment as she's proposing it. And with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions on the main bill.
Thanks. Senator Walker.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Madam Co-Chair. Vicki Walker, State Senator for District 7. And yes, I am hitching a ride. This is a great relating clause. It's a great bill. And what my amendment does, it is actually Senate Bill 319, which this committee passed out March 20th, and the Senate overwhelmingly endorsed shortly thereafter. It has been in the House Rules Committee for several months, and I had a commitment that it would be moved. And we are almost out of time, so I gave up and decided to hitch a ride. So, and Senate Bill 319, to refresh your memory, is related to write-in candidates. It sets a deadline of 45 days to accept the office of nomination or nomination if you have been written in on the ballot and you won. And it also sets a deadline of 30 days after the general election deadline, filing deadline for candidates to file the statement of economic interest, those same write-in type candidates. Currently, that's not in the law. And you heard a great deal of testimony about that in February and March. So I would just urge you to vote this bill out with my tidy little amendments.
Thank you. Senator Walker, it's nice of you to bring us this neat little package. Senator Corcoran, Senator Burdick, any comments or questions?
I just can't. We do so much in the Rules Committee. I get mixed up sometimes. When it crossed the Senate floor, did it cross with what was the vote count?
It was a unanimous vote in the Senate.
Thank you very much.
Which is my recollection. And if I'm incorrect, I will let you know. The only person I think who would have voted no would have been Senator Hannon, who does vote no a lot. But, Madam Chair and Senator Burdick, I do believe it was a unanimous vote. It was a unanimous.
That's correct.
Thank you. It was.
Thank you.
No objections.
Thanks, Senator Walker. I don't know if you want to hang out and see what happens.
Madam Chair, I would love to, but I really need to get out of the building. I need some R&R.
Oh, you need to get out of the building. Well, thank you very much. Have a good day.
Senator Corcoran, it will take me an hour to get ready to get out of the building, so... No.
I know. I've picked you up before to go do something. Whatever.
Well, we need
goodbye.
To
it's sure been really nice seeing you.
Thank you. I appreciate
it. Mr. Schneider, come on up.
Are you okay?
Well, I think so.
Okay.
Can I just be passed the bill?
I suppose you have to leave, too.
What exciting things can you tell us in addition to what it's already been told us about this particular proposal?
Madam Chair, Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, I'm Paul Snyder from Association of Oregon Counties, and we think this is a good bill and it should pass. I also understand from looking at the county clerks in the back of the room that Senator Walker's amendment is not objectionable.
Great. Thank you very much.
Two sentences. I like that.
Extremely impressive. Anybody else wishing to testify, scream, yell, or holler about this particular measure? Okay. Thank you. I'm going to close the public hearing. Okay. We're going to move into a work session on 2378. Senator Clarno.
Yes, Madam Co-Chair, I would move the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2378.
Senator Clarno has moved the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2378. Is there any objection? Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Amendment passes. Senator Clarno.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move House Bill 2378 to the Senate floor as amended with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Clarno has moved House Bill 2378 to the Senate floor as amended. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing and seeing none, the motion passes.
You want to carry the bill?
Okay.
Senator Walker.
You want to carry?
Okay. Senator Walker shall carry the bill. Whatever you want to do, we can do. We're going to move into measure drafting and introduction requests. Senator Clarno has moved that we should introduce and draft
the reincarnation.
The reincarnation of House Bill 3319 with the Dash 2 amendments. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? So ordered. Thank you, Senator Clarno.
Thank you.
Work session on, I know you guys are all waiting for 905, right? Okay. Senate Bill 450. Open a work session. Senator Burdick.
Madam Chairman, Senate Bill 450 came out of my experience with the initiative process where a statement for the voters' pamphlet on a measure I was doing was clearly put in the wrong category, and I spotted it. It was from the other side of the measure, as it turns out. I spotted it and tried to get it placed in the correct section. In other words, it was entered in the yes arguments for yes, and it should have been in arguments for a no. And I was told that there was, once it was turned in, if that box was checked, there was absolutely nothing that anybody could do. So when this session rolled around, I called up the person who filed that argument, and I said, did you intend for it to go into this section? He said, no, but once it was turned in, there was nothing I could do. So he and I got together. It happened to be the head of the Libertarian Party in Oregon, who's not normally an ally on issues, necessarily. And so we testified a few months ago in favor of this. And then the Secretary of State's office proposed a Dash 1 amendment to allow the Secretary of State, upon approval by the actual presenter of the argument, to also change the designation if it's accidentally filed for the wrong measure. So what these would do is allow the Secretary of State, if the person who submits the argument and pays for the argument wants to change the section, they accidentally check the wrong box, that they can do so. All the Secretary of State can do is, all the Elections Division can do is call them and say, it appears this is in the wrong section. And then if the person wants it in the wrong section, that's fine. This does not address that issue. So it's just a small good government measure, and I would ask for your support.
Senator Burdick, are you aware of any opposition on this particular committee?
No.
Okay. We are in work session, and Senator Burdick has moved the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 450. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, her amendment passes. Senator Burdick.
Madam Chair, thank you. I move Senate Bill 450 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Burdick has moved Senate Bill 450 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Hearing, seeing none, passes. Senator Burdick, you can be the carrier.
Thank you.
No, I got to say, Madam Chair, I really enjoyed those spoofs on Measure 9 when they did them, and the arguments in favor. Well, I think a person should be able to.
They can.
Under this proposal, they can, Senator Corcoran.
Okay. This would not change.
Heaven forbid we prevent people from doing
spoofs. According to the Book of Leviticus in the Bible, oyster eating, crossbreeding cattle, shaving a beard, wearing clothing made of mixed fibers, cursing one's parents, and adultery are just as immoral as homosexuality.
Thank you, Senator Corcoran. With that, we will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 905 and invite John Powell and Kevin Morton. Taylor, welcome. Do you want a few comments while they're coming up?
Sure. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 905 clarifies that modification of an approved utility facility used to provide personal wireless services not subject to subsequently enacted approval criteria. It also exempts the modification of utility facilities used to provide these services from certain land use regulations.
Thank you. Welcome. Sorry it's not still overflowing with people, but it's very nice weather, and it's a Thursday afternoon. So,
Madam Chair, if you could get the rest of the people in the audience to leave, I'd appreciate it.
Including the witnesses.
Most likely the witnesses.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm John Powell, representing AT&T Wireless. Before you is Senate Bill 905, which is an amended version of House Bill 2785, which passed the House and got sent to the Water and Land Use Committee that used to be. For that reason, Senator Beyer allowed the use of a priority bill to reintroduce the concepts. The language is different than 2785, although the intent is the same. In the 28 years or so that I've been in this building, I've rarely introduced legislation on behalf of a client that deals with current rules, regulations, and particularly, I think some of you know how strongly I feel about retroactivity issues. Very serious to me, and so I take this area of the law extremely seriously. However, when it comes to this particular issue with wireless cell towers and looking for alternatives, I could find no other solution than a statewide solution. And the sum of what Senate Bill 905 attempts to accomplish is to allow cell tower modification based on the standards that were in place at the time it was approved, and not require either the entire additional land use planning process, including the establishment of the need for that tower, to be run through a second time, and would allow these modifications to occur according to good land use planning policies. So the bill does that beginning on the second page in three sections of the law. The first one deals with the needs test, and it simply says if you're going to modify a tower and the antennas on the tower and the equipment on the tower, you need not go back through sections 2 to 5 of this section of the law, which is the section of the law that you need to prove the need for these facilities. That's been done. The tower is there, and we think that a modification should not require a complete reapplication and going through that process. And as you can see, modification is defined includes a change in existing equipment or the co-location of new equipment with existing equipment. And by co-location, we mean another carrier locating on the same tower, which again conserves land and negates the need for yet another cell tower somewhere. There is one amendment that's going to be proposed to that by 1,000 Friends, which would add a clause to the end of that sentence, but does not include an access road or an access road or tower. We've discussed this just previous to the hearing, and we're hoping we can add an additional tower. It's not the intent to put two towers here, but it might mean that this tower is being replaced, so a new tower might go in its stead. So we're working on that, and hopefully can reach an agreement on that language. Other section of the law that you will hear about today from the cities begins in the bottom of page 3, in section 3, and that is the section that says that modifications that are made to cell towers that are consistent with the standards that were in effect and the ordinances that were in effect when the tower was approved will govern modifications to that tower. And I'm going to turn to Kevin to allow him to explain to you the need for this kind of a change in the law.
Thanks. Madam Co-Chairs, members of the committee, my name is Kevin Martin. I'm a land use consultant for AT&T Wireless. Previous to being a consultant in wireless, I was also a land use planner at the county and city level for 16 years, so I'm well-versed in the local regulations on both sides of the counter. Unfortunately, my explanation can't be limited to two sentences on this, like previous testimony, but I'll try to keep it as brief as I can. The bill, as John pointed out, addresses two major issues. One is the necessity test in ORS 215-275. In other words, if you want to do a utility facility as defined by law, you have to go through and show that you can't site it on non-EFU land. We're not asking that that test be removed for any new tower that was ever built. We're only saying that that particular test should no longer be applicable when it's already been established. A reason for taking that test out is that it encourages co-location, which the more tenants you can put on an existing tower, the fewer new towers that are going to need to be built. That's the positive effect. The second issue that applies to the cities, we're running into difficulties whereby you have a tower that was approved, say, in the 90s or even 2-3 years ago, and a city or a county will subsequently amend their wireless regulations so that they're much more detailed, in some cases much more onerous. And somebody comes in and wants to modify their existing tower, or somebody wants to co-locate on an existing tower, and the regulations are so stringent or impose such requirements that the cost is prohibitive. They may make you remove an existing steel or wood pole that's been there and say, okay, now you have to disguise it as a tree if you want to add these antennas. Well, there's a discouragement to co-location because it's going to cost you another $100,000, $150,000 to make those kind of changes. So we're only asking that existing facilities be allowed to continue on as they are, subject to the rules that were in effect at the time it was adopted. It kind of grandfathers them in. And by doing this, you're encouraging co-location, and you're also making it simpler for the existing carriers on that tower to make changes. The technology is continually changing. I think I was talking earlier with some of the individuals, and frequencies change. And every time you change the frequency you transmit on, you have to change the antennas because antennas are frequency specific. Or you've got one type of radio cabinet. You need to add a radio cabinet, or say you've change your contract with your equipment vendor and you want to switch from Motorola to Ericsson or something like that. Some communities would actually have you go through a zoning process, and by doing that, try to impose a lot of additional conditions that weren't originally imposed. So in summary, it would simplify our ability to keep up with technology. It would encourage co-location, greatly simplify that, and at the same time, this bill would not apply to anything new that comes down the pipe. In other words, we're not asking that towers that we may propose in the future go back to rules that were existing from the past. No, those would be subject to what is applicable at the point in time where that application was submitted. Thank you very much.
Questions? Comments?
Yeah. Madam Chair?
Senator Burdick.
On the, I guess what concerns me is this is so broad. For example, you know, if you wanted to say, modify a tower in a way that would make it, you know, we don't know what the future technology is going to dictate, that would make it more visible, more disruptive, or more something that we don't even know about now. Maybe it would have more microwaves that make interfere with radio reception or something like that in the area. And don't you think it's appropriate at some point to have, if you're going to have something, a modification that causes some level of disruption, to have to establish some kind of need for that?
That's where the problem comes in, was when you're trying to establish need. First off, I think the main thing that'll happen on a modification is the visuals will change. Co-location requires adding antennas to an existing tower. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you've noticed cell towers. A lot of people, they don't notice them until they get involved in something like this. But you'll have a tower 100 feet tall and it'll have a platform on the top with anywhere from 6 to 12 antennas. A second tenant comes on that tower, they will put a platform 10 to 15 feet below that. All of a sudden, you've got two platforms with anywhere from 3 to 15 antennas. What limits how much you can put on the tower is the structural loading of the tower. You can only add so much. You can't meet the building code, can't meet the engineering requirement, the ice load standards, the wind standards, and whatnot. So there's a limitation on that. Regarding interference, interference is not a consideration at the local level. It's strictly regulated by the Federal Communications Commission. It's the same with the emissions, the RF power density. Again, that's subject only to FCC, and all the carriers are required by law, by federal law, to maintain compliance with interference standards and with radio frequency emission standards as well. So that's already accommodated at the federal level. So the basic thing you're probably going to be looking at is, you know, health and safety regarding the structure of the tower requires a building permit to do that, which requires structurals. Again, on the visual end of it, most jurisdictions want you to co-locate and they encourage it. However, it's becoming to the point now where there may be some limitations put on that ability to co-locate.
Any other questions?
Madam Chair, I might just conclude by explaining at least for my friends from the cities who told me yesterday they would have reason to oppose the bill, that I think it, I am free game for them because the bill was changed to specifically include cities in this version. So I think they have every right. You know, sometimes we get a little angry when it's late in the process and your bill's been around for 100 years and then somebody jumps on you at the last second. This is not that kind of a jump, and I'm hoping that we can work with them and find a resolution to this, because I do think it is good public policy to encourage co-location, and I don't know, most of us, including myself, do not follow the financial well-being of certain industries from time to time, but Kevin informs me that this industry is one that is not in real good stead nationally on an economic basis. So a $150,000 requirement when you want to co-locate or something is a major impediment. So we're hoping we can find a way to work this out and get the policy moving forward.
Madam
Chair. Senator Burney.
I would also hope that would extend to working with the 1,000 friends.
Yes,
that
we
have
will.
Some concerns over
we
the
will.
Specific.
We will. Thank you.
That's a nice segue into the fact that we won't be moving this bill today. So, thank you very much. Excuse me. Thanks very much for being here. And next up we have Dave Fiscom and, is it Richard Kosasan? I had a hard time reading the writing.
Richard Kosasan. He had a hard time visualizing.
I'm not going to.
Richard, get up here. Ryan, welcome as well.
This is the golfing contingent.
This is the we'd rather be golfing contingent, I think.
Shall we go now?
Madam Chair, for the record, Dave Fiscom, representing for the purpose of this testimony T-Mobile, which is a company that serves a lot of Oregon with thousands of customers. Our purpose, I think, is to, in light of your time and your interest on a Thursday afternoon, essentially do a Me Too from the standpoint of T-Mobile. I think it's a good bill. We're pleased to participate in the process to work out the compromises Mr. Powell has described, and I don't need to go beyond what they've said in their earlier testimony. We want to work to produce a result here, and we're pleased to cooperate in that.
Great. Richard?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Richard Kosasan, Verizon Wireless. Mr. Fiscom, on my left, admitted this morning that he obtained that shirt on a sale. He didn't pay full price.
Probably the same
like
place
it.
You got your tie. That's a really ugly tie, Richard.
Madam Chair, Senator Corcoran, thank you.
You're welcome.
It's a clip-on.
Gross!
Verizon Wireless is very supportive of the bill. We believe that it, as a Senate bill as well as the House bill, would represent a common-sense approach to the issue to address a previous issue brought up by Senator Burdick. In terms of modification, if one were to look at the technology in the wireless industry, you will see basically all pieces of equipment becoming smaller and smaller and smaller and more compact. In the future, the day of the large-scale tower is limited in scope. So the intrusion in terms of a landscape issue or a community issue, I think, is not going to grow, but will be diminished in future years. We, too, would be happy to work with 1,000 Friends as well as the cities, but we would encourage the committee to take a very favorable position with respect to the bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
For the record, Brian DeLeishman representing Nextel Communications. I just indicate a me too. The one additional piece that I would comment on was I found it very fascinating about the switching of frequencies and the change of antennas. You may or may not be aware of the controversy historically about frequency interference. And obviously Nextel is one that has the frequencies closest to the public service bands. And so they are, in a national and a state level, attempting to trade out frequencies so that they don't have that particular problem. And in doing so, obviously, then the towers that they do have or where they're located in the state, they would have to change out antennas. And so they would definitely would be interested in this this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedules to join us today.
Yeah. Four.
Randy and David Barenberg, why don't you guys come on up?
We set the agenda very carefully today. Good afternoon, Madam Chair. And Madam Chair and members of the committee, Randy Tucker, 1,000 Friends of Oregon. And I'm just not sure what I'm going to do when all these people are so willing to work with me. You know, it's a new experience.
It won't last long.
You have to buy the beer.
Is that shirt on sale, too?
This shirt, Madam Chair, Senator Burdick, actually was purchased in Hawaii, where I actually grew up. So I actually can wear these things with some authority, I think. But though no one really knows that. I'm distributing testimony from my colleague, Carrie McLaren. She's our farmland protection advocate and staff attorney on these issues. And you can see the language that Mr. Powell referred to. I will be speaking with her early next week, and we will have those discussions about whether the addition of the word additional is any issue. It doesn't seem like it would be a problem to me, but I've gotten in trouble before by getting out ahead of my smarter colleagues. So I think that'll probably be something that'll be just fine with us, but I will reserve judgment on that until I can communicate with her. But you know, I think our concerns, you've all, I think, previously heard our concerns about the number of additional uses in farm use zones. This doesn't seem like that kind of a problem, and we're glad to work with the proponents of this bill to make sure it doesn't have any unintended consequences.
Right, David.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Corcoran, excuse me.
So in the amendment she wants, or she proposes, I guess I don't quite understand. I think the earlier testimony was that
because of what the tower can sustain, they might have to switch out towers from one to another. And
right.
I don't understand why you would require them to go through that. Is your intention to make them go through the whole process again?
No, Madam Chair and Senator Corcoran, that was what would be addressed by the addition of the word additional tower. Mm-hmm. In other words, if you're going to replace a tower, and if we put the word additional in here, but does not include an access road or an additional tower, then that would accommodate the replacement of a tower.
Oh, so you're going to put in the word additional?
That's what I'm saying, is I'm making sure that I check with my team on that, but that seems like the likely direction that this would go, and I don't see a problem with it as I sit here today. I just want to make sure that I check on that. So, yeah,
thank you.
That seems like a reasonable change.
Thank you. Madam Chair, for the record, my name is David Barenberg, and I represent the League of Oregon Cities. And I, too, am overwhelmed with the number of folks who want to sit down and work this out and look forward to sitting down and doing that. Just from the city perspective, a funny thing happened on the way to getting some comments on this bill, first of which was we sent it out, as Randy does, to people who are smarter than me, though that's much easier for me to do than Randy. And I think that a lot of folks just read the relating clause to the bill, which, as you can see online, too, relating to utility facilities used to provide personal wireless services in exclusive farm use zones. And for a number of our city folks, they looked at that and said, oh, that doesn't impact us, though some cities do have land still within EFU. Then Section 3, which is a freestanding section and doesn't amend the EFU section, but would affect, as we read it, all of city facilities. Just in any land owned by the city. We think that that's just beyond what was in the relating clause, and look forward to chatting with our friends in the industry to see what accommodations we can reach. And thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Any comments or questions? Thanks.
Thank you.
Anybody else just dying to testify on a very nice Thursday, the day before the 4th of July? I'm not seeing any volunteers with that.
Randy's here. He could testify.
We appreciate folks in the industry working with both, our friends and the cities to get those issues worked out so we can get this bill back quickly so we can get it back over to the House. With that, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 905. Anything else coming for the committee? Let's go home, everybody. Have a great 4th of July. Drive carefully. We're adjourned.